When you make a promise to Mike Petke that you're going to have to keep. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast featuring myself and Nick Thornton. Nick, how are you?
I'm good. I'm short of about $100 though. my wallet is a little lighter than it was when we talked last. You flew home from Vancouver, and I was feeling so emotionally distraught. I decided to put an ill-timed bet down.
What did you do, Nick?
So, I think like a lot of people, I was really excited by the knockout round MLS games. I thought that the two Western ones in particular were really exciting, and so I'm watching RSL and LAFC, and RSL sort of hanging in there a little bit and starting to do something, and I was just like, I just really, like, I don't, in theory, have anything against LAFC, but as you know, I like to be a downer on sort of the Cinderella stories and love I'm forever the underdog supporter, and so I just tweeted out, like, with the hashtag of the game. I didn't tweet at anyone in particular, I said, if RSL somehow manages to win this game, I will wear a Mike Petke jersey to the Whitecaps home opener next season. And right about the time that I tweeted that, Krylak does that clever little scoop shot that beats Tyler Miller. And all of a sudden it's 2-2. And I'm thinking, okay, this could happen. But and then, of course, in the end, just the unlucky ball that came off of Walker Zimmerman's head or shoulder that made it 3-2 to win the game for them. I was like, you know what? Worth it. It's a bit of fun. Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention, I tweeted that out, and then Real Salt Lake responded saying, we're going to hold you to that. So Real Salt Lake has it on Twitter record that I did in fact make this bet, and I do intend to honor it. I haven't ordered my custom Mike Petke jersey yet, but I promise I will, and there will be photos of me shamefully sporting it at the Whitecaps home opener. I'm just really hoping that we're not playing them in our first game.
That would be really funny. It's usually like a Toronto or a Portland, like an RSL or something, but that would be very funny.
Yeah,
you got to look in the thrift shops. I've seen strangely I think I did at one point in a Penticton thrift shop see an RSL scarf. And I was like, why is this here?
But it was all in good fun. I kind of knew it was a stupid bet, but I was glad with the result. So I said,
well,
you know, it's worth it.
We could start with those midweek games. That's the big lesson there is, don't bet against Real Salt Lake. I feel like a lot of people kind of did when they got drawn into the LAFC knockout round position, because I guess, you know, even though we had, you know, they came into the playoffs with LA did with a little bit of form, but in general they had had sort of a weaker second half of the season than the first.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody still kind of predicted them to do something, and I think that RSL didn't have that same energy around them.
Yeah.
But Krylak, who I still smell like the Aqua Teen Hunger Force character Frylock in my notes, and then I see the back of his jersey and I realize that isn't the case, with two great goals.
Absolutely, and a great team effort as well from RSL. This is something that I think we talked about is them having it in them, but we didn't really think it was going to go their way. But Mike Petke has shown that, you know, he's a more clever coach than I think sometimes he's given credit to. And RSL was just able to plug up the midfield and really stifle LAFC and play their game. And, you know, it looked fairly open for most of the game, but I think Mike Petke knew that he was going to give up goals in that game. So it was always just a case of they've got to score more. Nick Raimondo came up huge on the night as well, and I think
absolutely
definitely helped with the 3 points. And ultimately, you know, like, it was good from, I think it's, I forget who scores first for LAFC, but Ramirez, they sort of traded goals back and forth. Ramirez gets a great one that makes it 2-1.
Yeah.
And you know, the momentum started to look to flow in LAFC's favor. But as I think we've discussed before, they're a team that has a couple of gears to them. But when you throw a wrench in the spanner, it's kind of they sometimes struggle to react. And I think RSL knew that and just knew that they just had to keep putting as much pressure as they possibly could on them, knowing that would leave them a little bit open at the back. But I thought across the board, RSL had one of their best team games of the season in that. And there's nothing like starting the playoffs with an interesting storyline of an upset, right?
Yeah, this is... I think that we've always talked about LA, both LAs, but this one as well, as being one of those teams that are is sort of in the position where, you know, they're losing games 3-2 in the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that first goal with Krylock, the biggest thing that they did was just realize that if they pull the ball off to the side as they did, they could stretch that defensive line,
yeah,
and create gaps that can be exploited. And so it was kind of like a simple play, but it was a move designed to pull them out of position, and that's something that they were able to do with the LAFC defense.
Yeah, well, and we know LAFC is a very aggressive attacking side, and that usually means that Jordan Harvey and Steven Betisher are pushing up the pitch quite a bit. So you do end up with room down the wings. And, of course, you know, they've got a pretty solid back line, but there's certainly ways of exploiting it. And I just thought they did it perfectly. So interesting result. And my MLS soccer jersey cabinet will be expanding as a result of it.
The when you look at the season and what the lessons are. I know I was saying last week, you know, if you're in the knockouts, you get knocked out after one game. Is it really count as being in the playoffs? But as a first-year team to host a playoff, to deliver, if you're going to think about it maybe more in the NFL model, where you're counting more than playoff runs, home playoff games.
Yeah.
LA was able to deliver one in their first year as a team. And that is, I think, the lesson in terms of their defensive vulnerabilities. That that's the lesson to take into the offseason and into their second campaign.
Absolutely, and I mean Bob Bradley deserves all the credit in the world for what he's done with the team this season. It has been, it's been a historic run for them. And of course, it's one of those things where I don't think there's too much they need to change. I think they need to strengthen in a couple of their defensive midfield positions, arguably bring in some younger players as well, just to change up when you've got tired legs. Bob Bradley sort of favored going with a good, solid mix of experience and younger players. They're a very fast attacking team, but yeah, I wouldn't be overly concerned if I were him about what would change. I think this is also just sometimes a result of this is what happens in MLS, right? Is that eventually RSL had 10 days of rest, clearly drew up a great game plan, stuck to it, and were able to beat LAFC. Had they played the game a day earlier or a day later with slightly shifted tactics, then LAFC wins it, right? Like, And especially the goal that comes off of Walker Zimmerman's head, like, there's nothing Zimmerman can do about it. He's just in the way of what's, I think, supposed to be like maybe a shot or a cross. But, sometimes you just get unlucky. But I think RSL certainly has gotten very good at making their own luck. And as we'll talk about in a little bit, they've been able to continue that luck.
And it's great to bring up Walker Zimmerman because it's important to remember that as much as we roast LAFC for not having enough focus on defense sometimes in their player acquisitions, as they're always picking up new attacking midfielders.
Yeah.
Marc-Anthony Kay was injured, and he's somebody that chips in on that side of the thing. And, mm-hmm. and I think that Walker Zimmerman has done a great job of stepping up to the plate after Laurent Simon left in the middle of the season.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing that really tells me what kind of structure Bradley's put in place there, because to have that key piece leave or be lost due to injury, that the team really could have collapsed. And instead, yeah, like you said, sorry, I'm mixing my storylines up here, but I mean, in terms of having their center back and captain leave, and then to lose Marc-Anthony Kay, those are really two key central pieces that they needed, that they were able to fill in quite nicely, despite, as we've talked about, the fact that they seem to spend most of their money on attacking players.
The other big upset, I would say, of that knockout round happened a day earlier. Mm-hmm. And it was... I wouldn't say, like, you know, DC... The renewed version of DC United has sort of the same marketing power behind it as LA does in
sure.
terms of, like, this is the league's new hotness, as much as it's a club with a storied history.
Absolutely.
It's very much the thing the league wants people to be looking at and thinking about and talking about. And I feel like the moment that they forced their way into the playoffs, people thought that there was a long campaign ahead of them. But at the first the first home playoff game at Audi Field, DC lost on penalties to Columbus.
They sure did. This for me was a spectacular game. And I really didn't know who to cheer for. I felt allegiances to both sides, right? I mean, we've been on the Rooney gravy train, and we've also been, of course, following hashtag save the crew or saved the crew. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of ready for an exciting game of soccer. My worry is that defensively, I think the teams are fairly similar, and defensively they might cancel each other out and it wouldn't be an interesting game. But that's not quite what happened.
No.
Briant gets in early and gives DC an early lead, and it sort of starts to feel like, okay, this could be DC's night if Columbus can't pull things together. But then a cross sort of bounces into the box. I feel like DC's had trouble defending crosses into the box this season at numerous points, even when they've been doing well. And Higuain pounces on it to equalize. Then he does it again with a clever header.
It looks like that first Higuain goal is like from two DC defenders running into each other.
A little bit. It had some Keystone Cops elements to it. A little bit of a scramble there. And then De Leon gets the last minute leveler, which I forget, was it 2013 they said? He scored a last minute goal to win things for DC in the playoffs. I wish I remembered that storyline better, but he's been a hero before. And that's in the added time because it's 1-1 going into the extra period. So then they go to penalties. Yes. Now, you said you saw this game, right?
So I didn't get to watch the whole game itself because I was here, there, and everywhere. I was doing bar trivia with my sister in Vancouver, so I saw various chunks of it on highlights.
Okay.
In the bar of the distance, and I had to be like, hold on, I'm looking at this. But I did get to see the shootout in full.
Great. Okay. Wind was a little bit of a factor.
Right. Assad kept replacing his ball.
Yeah. And I don't think it really drastically affected the outcome, but it was clear on a couple of the penalties that the ball actually moved right as the player went to strike it.
I didn't see that.
I don't think it would have really made a huge difference because Zach Steffen comes up with two huge saves. First of all, against Wayne Rooney, and then second against Acosta. So this was really sort of Zach Steffen versus the world. And it's one of the few things that I think we could say about a possible maybe not strength of DC's is that they're relatively untested in terms of penalties. So I don't think that was necessarily their game plan going in. I thought DC was going to win it on penalties, but I foolishly underestimated Zach Steffen.
And I think that like the playoffs last year was a time that I think that we all got a great look at what Zach Steffen brings to the table.
Yeah.
And I know I need to not be over focused on it, but it's true that I have sort of had a look at this. I saw the shootout in the All-Star game when Juventus lit him up as, like, majorly demoralizing. So I've always been kind of worried about him. But it seemed like this, you know, the look on his face when he just denied Wayne Rooney on what I believe was the first shot.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Was DC's first shot.
Yeah.
Was this great sort of announcement of, I'm here, I'm really good at this.
Yeah, yeah. In some ways, I think that save kind of won the shootout. Because I think that put some ice in his veins, and then also signaled to DC that this was not just going to be a case of knocking them in. And De Leon, unfortunately, skies his penalty, puts it over the net. And
Bill Hamid also saved one, and you kind of have everything is this referendum on Rooney, where De Leon, the Hamid saves one, and you see Rooney on the side being like, it's not my fault anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then De Leon is the one who, unfortunately, is the final skier.
Yeah. Well, I think they noted in this match as well that Bill Hamid hadn't faced any penalties this season at all. So that also was going against them, that although he's been commanding between the sticks for a good 4 or 5 months now, more or less, was it that long? Maybe not. Maybe a few months anyway. But untested in that department. Certainly he's saved penalties before, but it's certainly not one of his strengths.
Yes.
And so it was a little sad to see this great run from DC end so soon. But again, I think everything to play for next season, and very positive, knowing that playing in their new stadium from the get-go next season, they shouldn't be dropping as many points when they're playing at children's parks across the District of Columbia.
They're definitely going to be, you know, I have always preached the unsuccessful first season as being a big mantra when you bring in these big players.
Mm-hmm.
I found the result of I was trying to find the result you were looking at, and it was DC in 2012 going over New York in 2-1 on aggregate in the 2012 Eastern Conference semifinals, with De Leon scoring at the 88th minute of the second leg.
All right.
To be the only person scoring in that contest.
Nice.
So yeah, he did great to get them there. And it was also unfortunate the way it happened, because, you know, there had already been a saved shot. Columbus was in a winning position, and then Mullins shot it off the post.
Yeah.
And then immediately it's like, oh, as long as DC can bury this, they're still in it. And then right straight into the sky over the bar, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunate, right? And it shows even the best strikers and the most experienced players can sometimes get it wrong. And even as he was approaching that ball and I saw him lean back, I was like, it's going over. He's lost his cool. I think the wind, you know, just mentally affects you if you're not sure the ball is going to stay where it is. And he sort of backs up as he's, or leans back rather, as he's about to take that kick. And this striking 101, get your body over the ball.
Unideal. A non-upset was New York City 3, Philadelphia 1.
Yep.
As good as Philadelphia can be on occasion, and we've seen them, you know, make their mark and get into the playoff run, I don't think they were able to get a lot together against New York. They got the goal, which is nice. It's a great sort of, like, you know, statement of purpose. But by that point, it was already the game was already gone.
Yeah, this one, my notes for this one was just like, this one was a pretty timid affair, and where the knockouts in the East certainly weren't as interesting. It was just so clear that Philadelphia really couldn't deal with the pace of New York City, and Maxi Morales specifically. And kind of, you know, all of Philadelphia's old errors came back to haunt them in this game. They really didn't quite look themselves, and New York was able to just turn the screws on them and, I think, have a pretty easy game of kind of coasting to 3-0. And then, yeah, it's great that Corey Burke gets the late goal. He's had a hell of a season and a large reason why Philadelphia made the playoffs. But I don't think anyone really expected they would get much out of this match. If anything, I was a bit disappointed Philadelphia didn't put up more of a fight here. But it just, you know, the first two goals, the defenders just get caught completely out of position on the transitional play. And with the kind of speed that Morales and David Villa have and their clinical finishing, I don't think anyone was really surprised by this result.
No, and the one thing that I noticed in it is that I've been critical in the past of New York for a lack of group dynamic in their attack, you know? A lot of, you may sometimes have like two or three or four people that all have their own separate ideas of how they're going to get to the ball at the goal, or the goal at the ball. And in this case, especially the first goal, I thought that they were all working together in tandem a lot more efficiently.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It was a very good build up out of the back. It was an alert defender who gets the ball down to Morales. Morales runs into space, nutmegs his defender. David Villa's slowly jaunting down the pitch, and he's got his defender caught out and makes short work of it. So I agree. This is much better from New York City playing as a team. Unfortunate that I don't want to always be pitting the East versus West, but again, I felt like this one was a pretty timid affair with the kind of, it's like, yeah, see, this is why, you know, the West is still more competitive, I think.
Well, I think if you match up Columbus DC with LARSL, those were two pretty surprising results. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna say entirely the Eastern Conference ones were timid, because the DC one was wild.
It's true. I should say just the New York teams have been sort of lackluster in the playoffs for me.
The one game in the knockouts where I really thought, you know, I wish there was this, I want to see more of this, was Dallas-Portland. They put together a real display that I thought that they, you know, in terms of entertainment value, they definitely could have gone another 90 minutes and had a lot to say to each other, I felt.
Yeah. This is a good sort of scrappy game. I didn't favor Dallas to win this one. But I thought that they looked a little bit uncharacteristically poor at times and maybe could have gotten a little bit more out of it. But I was surprised that the game was as tight as it was, given that Dallas seemed a little bit off. But it also just shows you that, like, Portland has this ability to win games just through sheer magic sometimes. I mean, Diego's free kick is as good of a free kick as he's taken this entire season. And just blasts it. The second goal for them, I think, is Jesse Gonzalez tries to come out, and he sort of just really beefs it and makes a mistake. And then I think it's Sebastian Blanco that gets that second goal. And I think is it Matt Hedges that maybe got the goal for Dallas? So they somewhat kept themselves in it a little bit, but it was quite late and felt like it was never really on. But we should also point out, too, Portland did this with 10 men as well, because Mabiala got sent off, I believe, around like the 69th minute or something.
I feel, yeah, because he had the, he pulled down Dominic Badji.
Yeah.
Around the box. I really felt this game was the, was Dallas's darkest timeline.
Mm.
Like, there's so much that happened in this game, and I felt that they had so many chances that went wrong, that it's like, you know, there are definitely versions of this game that could have played out in their favor. The early offside goal that Rito Ziegler thought he had scored.
Yeah.
And did not.
Yeah.
Because he was offside.
He was way Barrios, he was very offside.
Barrios hits the crossbar in a shot that really could have gone in. There was a red card for Portland that they did, or there was a red card to Portland they didn't take advantage of. Baji could have got through if he hadn't got fouled on that, or if it had been 5 yards difference, that could have been a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And then that second goal, which the commentators referred to as a mess, with Dallas players out of position. And all I could think of when Hedges scored that 94th minute goal was, imagine if they hadn't have conceded that goal and they had managed to hold it to 1-0 till the end, which they definitely could have because, like I said, mess.
Yeah.
Right? It was always possible for them to get that far. And they could – there are just so many – there's an alternate universe version of this game where they won it like 3-0.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I do feel like Dallas got a little unlucky at a couple of points and maybe playing against 10 men should have made more of that. The other thing I was going to ask you about, I don't know if you saw any attendance figures for this game, but that stadium was mighty thinly attended, which I thought that considering the momentum that's been behind Dallas and the fact that they, you know, this is a playoff game against Portland side with a couple of big stars, I was surprised. I mean, their attendance has struggled this season at various points, but it looked like there was maybe 10 or 11,000 people there.
A lot
of empty seats.
Announced attendance on MLSsoccer.com is 10,297, which is bad.
That's real bad. And I get, like, it's a midweek game. I'm not trying to, like, crap all over the Dallas supporters or anything. I was just quite surprised. I mean, I heard it about the Columbus game as well, is that you've got a midweek game that's not really that well advertised. It's a knockout, so people don't feel as much of a sense of urgency about it. But I was surprised that attendance was so low.
I think it really does come down to the idea that, I mean, some of the factors that are always working against Dallas in terms of where the field is located in Frisco and they have had a lot of trouble with this in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think another, you know, it comes back to this idea of rushing out your first round of playoffs in the midweek, days after the end of the season. You can't confirm or sell tickets or tell anybody about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you, there's no,
but I think Dallas had clinched, had they not, like up until that point. So they knew they had a playoff game. But they didn't know the schedule of it though. That came later.
Yeah, the schedule isn't announced. The game's not announced. You can maybe, like, provisionally sell it. But it's like, there is this, as we talk about Dallas's issues with attendance, we also have to remember that this game, from an MLS perspective, was really poorly promoted.
Yeah.
From promotional, like, from aspects that promoters would take into account, like, when the game is, how early the game is announced, how much the game is talked about. Like, you know, is the game on Halloween?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But Portland found a way through. And then, of course, we have round one of the playoffs that have already taken place. And then, as we speak, I think Portland and Seattle have just kicked off for leg two. So do we want to just stay with Portland and talk about their first bout with Seattle?
Yeah.
I was really, really, really surprised by this game. What do you make of the fact that Portland beat Seattle 2-1 in Seattle?
I believe that first game not in Portland?
Oh, sorry. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so they went at home. I don't remember who wrote it. But I read a great piece about how this is what happens when you start giving chances to Jeremy Abobase.
Yeah.
Where it's like he achieved everything that he achieved, like, in the second half of the season, basically. I think that the combination of, you know, because he's also, I think he's also a part of that second goal, but that first one, he is played in, he splits through the center backs, and he gets around the keeper as well. He definitely added a spark to that offense. I think, you know, I was in the air on an airplane when this happened. Part of the strategy people always talk about is denying the away goal. But I think that you also have to take advantage of playing in front of your home fans. And Portland had to take a lead here.
Absolutely.
And I think that this is, you know, exactly what they had to do. Because I saw the highlights, I didn't exactly see the defensive side of the game in terms of how they held off Seattle.
Yeah, I admittedly, I missed it as well. So I went through a couple of highlight packages with this one. So I'm not quite sure either. One of the big things that I think affected this game for Seattle is, of course, Chad Marshall's injury, which I think happened around the 30th minute. He's unchallenged, but he just hits a ball awkwardly, and you see his leg kind of bend a bit weird, and he has to be stretchered off.
That's terrible.
We've since found out is a meniscus tear, and I think he had surgery yesterday, so he'll be, presumably out for the rest of the playoffs. So a speedy recovery to him, but that's just such a massive, massive piece for them, right? Like, and to lose such a stalwart player so early on into the match, I think has to only affect you mentally. And then Christian Roldan also was injured and had to be taken off. So I agree, going back to your point about the, you know, teams that want to deny the away goal for their opponent, but then create this atmosphere where you're not going as forward as much as you can, and taking, like you said, advantage of the fact you're playing in front of your home supporters to try to get a positive result. And giving up one home goal one away goal isn't the worst thing in the world if you can score more than the other team.
The whole reason why this is, you know, why it's valuable in the first place is because it's harder.
Yeah, exactly.
So take it. It's like as much as it's worth more. It's like, you know, all I ever want to work is overtime. Well, not necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a very interesting result, especially because, you know, Seattle had sort of more of they had the more advanced position on the table. In terms of the defense, as good as Marshall has been for them, in especially, you know, in terms of, this is not what you always talk about, you know, with a center back, but he's scored more this season than I've ever seen him score.
Absolutely. Well, and just as a on the field leader, as much as a center back, he's been a crucial piece for them for many seasons now, and I think a big reason why they've had playoff success. I just saw Roman Torres is starting in his place, so it's a big
moment for Roman.
It is, and not a bad second option.
Yeah, because he was a big part of, if I recall, he was a big part of that MLS Cup too.
Yeah, absolutely. Toronto remembers the effect that Roman Torres can have. Not necessarily always as a defender either. But so I think Seattle is in okay shape. But and of course, by the time this airs, the game will be done and dusted. So you can hold it to me now. But I think Portland has a way to hold on to this one and go through.
I agree. As powerful as Seattle can be, especially in front of their home support, and I'm hearing it's going to be well attended this game.
I just saw a shot of the stadium. It is well attended. So a Thursday game, it's looking not quite packed, but they've got at least 30,000 people there.
I understand there was a scheduling issue or something, and that's why it's happening on Thursday, and the rest of the games are on Sunday.
Oh, interesting.
That's what I'd heard anyways. But as powerful as Seattle can be, Portland has done what they have to do to be in control of their destiny for this game.
Absolutely. And if, you know, with Portland, it's always like I don't want to say they're only as good as Valeri is playing, because when he's playing because they have other great players. But when you have Valeri playing at his absolute best, Portland always has a chance to win that against anyone. So I still sort of see them as favorites to take this series and go on.
We'll see what happens with that. The some of the other games that happened, the other sort of, I think, triumph of making the most of your advantage at home was Columbus versus New York Red Bulls.
Yeah.
Which was another huge sort of upset result, I think, because even more than DC, Red Bulls have been one of the key teams people talk about. But Stefan had another amazing game. Was rescued by a post and then cleared the ball out with his head.
Yeah.
One of the ones where you could never be 100% sure what's happening.
Isn't it great when you have a player of that caliber and that, like, such great technique, but still at the end of the day, if you just need him to be like, just keep it out somehow. Throw anything in there. Use your knee, your head, the back of your head, whatever. And he's just like, okay, coach, and does it. He's an unreal talent, and also rightfully so won MLS Goalkeeper of the Year this season. I don't think there really can be any doubt about that amongst very good company, but...
Some people wondered about Robles, but I definitely think this is the right choice.
I agree.
The Columbus's goal was very pretty and is my pick for goal of the week, I would say.
Are you talking about... Well, there's only the one goal, so you must be talking about it. Berhalter came under a bit of heat for not starting Higuain in this match. But Berhalter knows best, apparently. Pipa comes off the bench. He's barely on the pitch for... I don't think he's on for very long before he just does a no-look back-heel pass straight to Jassy Zardes, who slots it home. I agree.
Which the commentators called tiki-taka, which it's not... But it was very, very nice.
Yeah, it's just a tika. It's a pipa. Yeah,
absolutely.
It was great to see Columbus playing. I mean, they just play so well as a team. They've got such a good structure around them. They're going to play spoilers, I think, more than once. I don't know what to call in this second round. We'll see what happens Sunday. But, I mean, New York has this... historic season, game most points of any MLS team ever for the regular season at 71, I think it is. Yeah. 71 points. It's just unreal. But as we always say, they do have their vulnerabilities. And this is a huge result because to hold, this is where you know, when you can hold a team to no away goals and get one yourself. They've put themselves in a really good position going into that game. And if they can sort out taking their chances, it's unfortunate that Justin Merrim still can really continue to struggle, even though he's back to his former club. He does understand the play, though, and it's clear Berhalter has a plan, and I believe he has a plan for a way they can win at Red Bull Arena.
Absolutely. I think that... this is the best possible result in the first leg for Columbus, who, remember, they're still... this is a 6-1. They were the last-seeded team in the playoffs, absolutely holding New York to their standard.
Yeah, absolutely. But they, again, just continue to somehow find a way and defy all the odds. And, I mean, they've been... in control of their own destiny this whole season with all of the stuff that has gone on with the team. It's really incredible to think about entering these playoffs with enough clarity of mind and plan to actually look like a team that can win it.
When I think of, this is, you mentioned Merrim and I hope that he does well, but also in that shootout midweek, to see Will Trapp step up and just bury one and with the utmost of confidence.
Yeah.
To think of where things were at the beginning of this year and to end the year with the knowledge that Columbus is still going to have a team, probably. Precourt is going to get what he wants, probably. And there's going to be a home to say at the beginning, not only is Columbus going to still have a team, but through all this, they're going to have a home playoff game. It's like,
yeah.
ludicrous. And they're going to win that. And
against the team that won the highest points total in MLS ever.
They would still deserve their team if they had not done so well over the last 2 years.
Absolutely, absolutely. Icing on the cake.
Yes, that they have done so is such a phenomenal poke in the eye of key business indicators.
Absolutely. Oh, take that, key business indicators. I mean, can you just imagine going back? And I imagine any Crew supporter would say yes to this. But like, can you imagine going back to, let's say, March or April and saying, you know, Columbus Crew is going to beat the New York Red Bulls in their second playoff game. People would have laughed in your face. I know a lot of Crew fans probably would have said, if there's a team that can do it, it's Columbus. Keep things interesting.
So that's definitely a match I'm going to have my eye on Sunday.
Right. Now, you introduce it.
Well, I was just going to say that another one people are going to have their eyes on is New York City Atlanta, in which Atlanta seems to really have taken a commanding position with a 1-0 away win.
Yeah. Well, it's notable, too, because it looked like Almiron was going to be out for some time, and I was amazed to see him start this game. I don't know what kind of physio program they have going on there, but I thought his injury seemed quite bad, and he could have been out for the whole thing.
I believe that physio program is called "Put Me In, Coach."
That's also called being young.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, he also, unfortunately, Atlanta should have had an early goal, and then Almiron was ruled offside on a corner, which I mean, I couldn't really see it, but it's such an awkward positioning that I was like, okay.
I spent a long time looking at it because I really didn't like it. What they're saying, to the best of my knowledge, and I could be wrong, it's actually a very deep throw-in, or it's a played short corner. But the idea is that, okay, say it's a short corner, but it applies either way.
Mm-hmm.
The player playing it plays to the other person and then drifts towards the goal. But despite the fact that it's a set piece, New York has nobody on either post. So the person who has received the short set piece goes and sends the ball forward through to other players. And it ricochets to Almiron. No, I think Almiron is the one that is the receiver of the short forward who drifts back in to take the final touch.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, because New York never touched the ball between the end of the move and the beginning of the move, Almiron is offside because the person who received the set piece, he was offside when the very first ball was kicked.
Yeah.
But he came back onside, and at the time of the last kick,
yeah,
he appeared to be pretty onside, but their idea was he remained offside through that whole time, which, I mean, I don't know the exact, like...
It was kind of one of those ones you feel like you've got to get your abacus and your flowcharts out, and where it was unfortunate, but I'm not an expert, so I'm just kind of like, okay.
I need that scarf that has the offside rule printed on it, but the thing is, I don't think if your offsideness was not involved in the play and you were onside by the time that you got into the play.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like you cherry picked it.
Exactly. And neither of us are big fans of giving anything to Atlanta, so. the star of this game was really the baseball pitch once again. I don't want to harp on it single time, but God, that stadium is just unacceptable. Like the amount of turf that was coming up, and it's like literally like you can see it rolling like carpet on the sides. It's such a shambles and such an embarrassment to have that as like one of the best teams in the league plays on this just completely unacceptable pitch.
I don't know. I don't. I'm not enough of a pitch design expert to know, because the Yankees are out, if there isn't some sort of midterm thing they could have put in, knowing that it was the playoffs to try and make this somewhat usable. But yeah, it's garbage.
It's total garbage. Anyway, what wasn't garbage was Remedy's first goal. He gets hugely lucky with. I mean, if you're going to score a playoff goal, to have it served on a dish to you like that, where you literally just need to run into it with both feet and just poke and jab at it until it goes in. Not a pretty goal, not the sort of typical Atlanta goal we'd expect, but as you said, they've put themselves in a fantastic position by getting the away goal. Atlanta did look the better team for much of this. New York City looked tired and probably from having only played a game a few days prior. But for as good as they looked against Philadelphia, they looked completely anemic and had very few chances in this game against Atlanta. And I don't favor their chances going to Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
No. The thing that I love about that goal that I also wanted to mention was I didn't understand it at first. So the ball is picking around and it is rolling. The goalkeeper is there, but Laurento does not kick at it, and the attacker Remedy that comes in is the one that has to poke it home. What is Laurento doing? He's just standing there to stop the New York City person from chopping through his legs. It's such an amazingly well thought out block where he's just there to take up space.
Yeah.
And give Remedy the room to poke it home. And he looks so pleased with himself when the ball goes in.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about this.
Yeah.
I felt that not only did New York City, not only did Atlanta put themselves in a good position, but New York City, I think, is so lucky that it's only 1-0. Like,
yeah,
they put what they put forward was so far away from getting a result that they really could have ended up like with a insurmountable 2 or 3 goal deficit heading into the second leg. So they can count themselves lucky that they are in a position to be on even terms, or to be on even terms with the goal at all.
Mm-hmm.
The last knockout game was RSL versus Sporting Kansas City. Something that I thought was a fairly even game, especially through the first 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Interested to see, and it ends 1-1. Sporting Kansas has the away Kansas City has the away goal. Interesting to see where things go in the second half or second leg. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, they sort of hyped this one up again, saying, you know, really trying to dig into this rivalry thing, which I think is there. I think a lot of fans outside of these clubs were sort of like, is this really a rivalry? But I think it was very clear that it is. Yes. Albert Rusnak's goal is just, ugh. The kid can play. Unfortunately, he won't be playing in the second leg due to yellow card accumulation, as he has picked up 2 in this series. So
that's garbage.
That kind of taints things. It was a good back and forth game, very exciting play. I liked it. I was able to watch this game live. I was, of course, cheering for RSL. I did not make any bets this time. Briefly thought about, like, maybe the next step is a tattoo, but I wisely just kept those ideas to myself. And then it's I think it's around the 60th minute where there's a player that just rushes Raimondo as he's clearing the ball. And in doing so, the ball deflects back to Diego Rubio. And Rubio has plenty of time to just tee it up and take a shot. Someone's got to close him down there.
Yeah.
And this is where you see that RSL is still vulnerable. I don't know. I really don't want to write off RSL considering what they've been able to pull off so far in the playoffs and overall this season. But going to Children's Mercy Park, they're going to have to, as Mike Pecky just very succinctly put it, we're going to have to go score some goals.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
The nice thing is that I think that it should be a fairly open attacking match. It should be an exciting barn burner of both teams just going at it, trying to get some goals. I would tend to think that Sporting KC is the better team here, especially at home because they've had such good form at home. But as we've seen, RSL should not be counted down and out at any point. And like, in many ways, kind of like Columbus, like they're in control of their own destiny. I'm sure that Petke has a plan that they can somehow win that game and go through. I don't know that they will, but it's possible.
It's interesting to see what will happen with that. I think this is one of the ones where, as good as Sporting Kansas City has been, we see this as kind of an even toss-up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which maybe doesn't befit the table positioning, but still.
When, to me, that's sort of ultimately what the playoffs should be, right? Is we want to see games that are competitive, and it's nice to see teams that are evenly matched and see who can come out on top. I think that's the point.
I think that one of the things to watch here is that my understanding from a little bit of Twitter deep dives is that people are split on Kyrie Shelton in terms of whether or not he should be starting on a regular basis. I don't mind him, but those people, I think, will have a little bit of ammunition given to them by the fact that he was subbed off for Diego Rubio immediately before Rubio's goal.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, and that's part of what has made Sporting Kansas City so good is that they do have depth and competition for positions, right? Like, they're not a team that has a bunch of star power. So it's great to see the teams that, have gone sort of a more traditional soccer route and build a really cohesive culture and a strong team have success. But it's going to be, I'll be watching that one. I think that's my, the game I'm most excited about this Sunday.
That's true. It'll be interesting to see. The other, you'd mentioned the USL game, or you'd mentioned the Portland Seattle game. The other thing that has gone on tonight is that Louisville City has won their second straight USL Cup with a 1-0 win over Phoenix Rising.
Yes.
So Didier Drogba has missed on a chance for silverware.
He has indeed, despite the just completely insane run that he's taken them on. Many speculating, and I think it's probably fair to say it'll be his last season, but it's Drogba, so you never know. He might show up in some other club or some other place, or maybe even with Phoenix Rising next year. Great game. I just watched the tail end of it, and Louisville just, they looked a little too good. I think Phoenix Rising was able to ride a lot of luck and a lot of momentum, and obviously having a player like Didier Drogba doesn't hurt.
No.
But congratulations to Louisville for the second straight USL title win.
The other big news MLS-wise that I saw was the hiring of Mark Dos Santos as the new Vancouver Whitecaps manager after spending the season as an assistant coach at LA in the wake of sort of the flaming of demise of the San Francisco Deltas in the NASL season last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we're all ready to stand sternly with our arms crossed.
Yeah.
As they had this stand with Mark Dos Santos campaign, the Whitecaps did.
Do you want to hear how I got these scars? I don't know why I think of that when I see him. He's just so serious looking.
Things are going to get so much more serious this year.
Why so serious?
I'm excited about this. I think that some people that are, you know, tracking the Whitecaps through that magic word of ambition are concerned that it's not somehow a more high profile coaching position, but And partially this is because I almost feel like when somebody is known to, I guess, the Canadian soccer sphere.
Yeah.
Through their role, he was the head coach of the second division Montreal Impact. He was the second head coach of the Ottawa Fury when they were in the NASL. I feel like there could almost be like a weird stink off of that for Canadian fans,
mm-hmm.
where they're like, oh, we see this guy all the time, but he wins everywhere he goes. He's had experience with top clubs in Brazil. He's had his MLS understudy role under Bob Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
Now's the time. He's been, you know, training for this in, you know, if not, when, if not now.
Yeah. I mean, admitted, first of all, it seems like the Whitecaps really can't keep a secret, because this has been pretty much common knowledge for the last 2 weeks that he was likely. It seems like somehow some of our podcast friends are just have good sources and find this stuff out way before anyone else. Kudos to them. I feel like I'll say this. From what I've heard so far from him, from everything that LAFC has said about him, I'm excited, he's saying all the right things. But of course, saying all the right things doesn't mean doing all the right things. And I just find it a little bit funny that, you know, a week ago, we were talking about the demise of this club and there was no way forward and no ambition. When with the hiring of an untested in MLS, I would argue, and a young coach that is not... I mean, his pedigree is great. I don't want to say that he's untested, but he hasn't coached an MLS club before. And in fairness, neither is Tata Martino. But I was like, oh, is this the thing that makes us super excited? Because I'm not quite sure what it is that fans and supporters are hoping for that is the magic bullet. And I'm not saying that they're claiming that this is, but I was a little surprised at the momentum and the excitement around him. Having spent a little bit more time looking at his career, and certainly, again, just seeing Bob Bradley's endorsement of him, and the player's endorsement of him, it certainly sounds like the time. I've been pleased by what he's said so far in terms of building a team, but, you know, it's all press conferences. For me, it really is a case of, let's see what he does in the off season to bring in players and get rid of some players that we don't need. And the proof will be on the pitch. I was a little surprised that this is the direction they went. It seems promising. I will remain cautiously optimistic, but I sort of made the comment on Twitter, as much as everybody's like, oh, he's had success everywhere he's gone, so did Martin Rennie. So, like, you know...
And at
comparable levels as well, I would argue.
It's not necessarily the level. It's how he achieved it. It's the level of, you know, I would say that he's somebody that you know, projects confidence. And a lot of people says that, or people have pointed out, if you've, you know, as he's gone through his career, he has a clear philosophy in how he organizes teams.
Yeah.
And I think those things can be good. Coaches are a weird one, because everybody wants a high profile coach, but what does a high profile coach constitute? Because,
sure.
Because this is the issue that we talked about with Jesse Marsh, right? Where everybody wants to hire Jesse Marsh, but then they end up firing Jesse Marsh. And then the next team that comes along thinks this is our chance to have a real genius.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run into trouble. Not saying he's necessarily the worst, right? But this idea of like that there is a surefire coaching solution. Any coach that you'll have heard of as having MLS experience, there are very few that haven't been fired in MLS.
Any also coach very true.
That you will. Any coach that you will have heard of from outside that you would be excited about has that added, you know, nerve-wracking quality of, well, do they understand how the transfer system works? which has derailed people. Which has derailed people before.
Yeah.
So I think that it's harder because you can't just point to statistics because, as you point out, it's you know, one level here, you know, you never know what's going to transfer when it moves, when you talk about moving to another level. But I'm cautiously optimistic. A lot of people have pointed out, unfortunately, that Mark Dos Santos's terrible history with this team in general. Oh, and I wanted to point out with Santos as well for that point, Dos Santos. He's never been fired. I don't think. I was looking at his Wikipedia page, and it's possible that as a head coach, there's something that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly looks as though he's taken new jobs and moved up or laterally in prominence every time.
Yeah, no, I mean the career is you know, he's obviously somebody that's driven and has a ton of focus and drive. And we are in an interesting time in MLS where there is no clear formula for what a successful coach looks like, right? Like there has mm-hmm. been this bias, and I have it a little bit too towards somebody that has MLS experience. But as we've seen, that doesn't, you know, with people like Bruce Arena, that doesn't always necessarily mean that that applies right now in the league. That yeah. player or coaches that have no experience in MLS can come in and be very successful, and players or coaches, we're talking about coaches, Nick, coaches that have a ton of MLS experience cannot fare well at all. And then you have guys like Peter Vermees that have been at the same club.
In LA.
Yeah, but then you've got Vermees, who's, you know, arguably one of the best coaches in MLS and has been for, you know, almost a decade. So there's, I wouldn't know how to go about doing it. I think I was a little surprised by the reactions. But of course, if I'm putting my supporter hat on, it's all going to depend on how he shapes the team in the offseason and what he decides to build. And I'm excited for what Whitecaps 2.0 looks like, because we've had, I think Robinson did build an identity, and I think it slipped away a little bit this year. But as much as we've been through several iterations, I think it's, well, we know it's time for a change and time for a new direction. I just really hope it's not a counterattacking one.
A lot of people have pointed out that change still has a lot to do with changing of philosophy in terms of the front office. So that's key.
Yeah.
The one thing I was pointing out is that, of course, he is a central figure in one of my earliest Whitecaps traumatic stories, which is the 2009 Canadian Championship end game, where the Caps beat Montreal in both legs and they beat Toronto at home. And all they needed to do was to have Montreal not lose by 5 goals, and they lost 5-1. because Montreal put out a B side or a C side, and a lot of people have pointed out, you know, that's for a long time the mantra was "Je me souviens," and if you're gonna souviens anything, if you're gonna remember it, Dos Santos was the head coach of Montreal at the time, and that gambit was heartbreakingly effective because. After all of that, after I sat at a bar, or I wasn't even, I don't even know. No, I was 19 at that point. After I sat in Jose's Pepper Club and watched things get progressively worse and worse in Penticton, the next weekend, Montreal played Vancouver in the league and beat the crap out of them. And it was almost worse. It was worse. It was worse because it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
The strategy worked.
Yeah.
They arrested all their players, doomed the Whitecaps in the Canadian Championship, and it worked. It delivered exactly the desired result. So, based on that, I wanted to provide a little bit of analysis, and here's your exclusive stat. Mark Dos Santos's record against the Whitecaps.
Okay.
Over the course of his career, is 7 wins, 4 draws, 7 losses, with this counts all of his head coaching roles, including his 2016 season in the games against Whitecaps 2, where they beat the Whitecaps in the semifinal in the playoffs that year. So it's like the league games are even, but they beat the Whitecaps in two playoff finals or two playoff draws, including the 2009 USL final. And they lost in one Canadian Championship semifinal. But it's even in the league, but where it's counted to them, they've found their way past. Dos Santos teams have found their way past the Whitecaps. So he's cerebral.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, yeah, we'll see. That's as much as I'm willing to commit to at this point. Certainly we could have done worse, and I'll say this. It's good to clean up this kind of thing right now and have him in now to have this much time to think in the off season and begin crafting the team and thinking about strategy moving forward rather than do it later. So at least the deal is done and now the work can begin.
We talked last week about maybe we were going to do talk some press conference stuff, mm-hmm. but I'm noting, looking at the schedule now, that it's an international break this next weekend.
Yeah.
So do you want to chat that then?
Let's do that then. I mean, by now I think most of the diehard Whitecaps fans have thoroughly digested and dissected what went on in the Whitecaps explosion, whatever we're calling it. I don't think we've come up with a trendy hashtag for it yet. We'll do that in the international break. Obviously, there'll be some playoff games to talk about, and then we can talk about the specifics of that, and then of course you were there, so we can share that audio as well.
In the meantime, where can we find you online?
You can find me online making bets that I don't always think thoroughly at That's So MLS, and on Instagram at That's So MLS as well. Twitter and Instagram are a little bit different. Instagram, of course, I try to post some interesting plays and videos and fun stuff there, and then Twitter, of course, is my commentary and bet making as things unfold. Where can we find you?
You can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. Get yourself a subscription so you can get your hands on issue 15. And you can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and on Apple Podcasts and wherever you can find wherever you find your great podcasts. So please rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes. And if you are currently watching or rewatching the Portland-Seattle game and you're at the same timestamp as us and you don't know the result, it's 0-0 going in right now. In the meantime.
Don't get sent off.
Not in the playoffs.
Don't get sent off in the playoffs. Don't get suspended for two yellow cards in the playoffs.
That especially.